XO skin. That's XO followed by the word skin. What do you like about your XO skin socks, Scott?
You know, probably the favorite thing that I like about mine is I've never had a stinky pair of XO skin socks.
And what do you mean by stinky? Because when I think stinky, I think holes on the end of my sock. These things are tough. They wear like iron, but they feel great.
They are. I've had mine. I think the oldest pair I've had is well over a year old, and they still act like they're as nice as the newest pair.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the other guys, I'm used to getting holes in them. They're like the Swiss cheese of toe socks. And I'll tell you, I don't have that problem with my XO skin. So you too can grab a pair and go on your longest runs with confidence.
And check out their other compression gear as well. Their shorts and their shirts are also equally as great. Go to exoskin.com or you can go to our partners page and link on over. There's a discount if you go to our partners page.
The Performance Enhancing Cocapelli, the PEK. Do you know what I'm talking about, Scott?
I do. They're temporary tattoos in the shape of the running Cocapelli, an ancient running warrior. And you too can have that Cocapelli on yourself with the temporary tattoo.
Well, and some of the benefits are you just run longer, you run stronger, you bonk less. They've been performance over the years. We've seen they just work, and they work for people that are running.
And the great thing is these are temporary. If you're not willing to make that full commitment to get the official tattoo, you can use this temporary tattoo. They're available on our website if you go to the store, and you can order a bunch. Not just one for you, but you need to be able to share it among your friends. And that's where the real power comes in.
Yeah, thank you, Don. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you sound like a nice guy on this podcast, but...
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards, and
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I am Don Freeman, socially distancing of more than 6 feet apart. In fact, at least 6 miles apart from my partner, Scott Warr.
It looks like you're more than 1,000 miles because I see a palm tree waving in the breeze next to the ocean waves, Don.
What you're looking at, Scott, is a Zoom virtual background, and I chose the waves today and a palm tree as my partner.
Yeah. So, Don, what are we doing today?
Well, that's thanks for letting me line this out, Scott. You know, we have Dr. Mark Cucuzella, and we all know he's the trail doctor. He's our doctor of choice when it comes to anything trail. And we've invited him on the call because, because we want to try to do a call-in show, our very first ever in 460 some odd episodes. We decided to let's take some listener call-ins and have the good doctor weigh in on some of these questions. Dr. Mark asked us before we got started here, so how many of these have you done? And, you know, Dr. Mark is an avid listener, so I really thought he'd probably have that number already, but however, we had to admit, this is the first time, and Dr. Mark is the guinea pig, the canary in the coal mine, if you will. And so, Dr. Mark, welcome to the experiment.
Oh gosh, well, I love being part of experiments, so we'll have some fun tonight, and hopefully not drop all these calls. That's your gig.
And as always, Don throws curveballs right after we hit the record button, and he came up with some rules, so... Tell us the rules.
Rules.
There's no. Always anybody that's
no
been
F bombs or anything like that.
Oh no, you could use all the F bombs you want.
Well, we got some callers from the UK and stuff, so they like to speak like that, like we're in a pub.
Hey, so like all TRN podcasts, there's always a little bit of a twist, whether it's Grab Bag, Audio Magazine, or what have you. We like to put a little spin on it. And what we really like to do is not let anybody in on the rules until after we start. And so the rule is the person is going to call in. They're actually, Scott's going to call them live. We put out a request on social media. Yes, we do have social media. Yeah. And although we need to get better at it, we don't do a lot of it. We're going to commit to getting better. But those of us that have us in their archive actually responded and said, I have a question for Dr. Mark. Scott has their phone number. Now, this is, you know, hypothetical. This is what is supposed to happen. Scott is actually going to call their cell phone number and have them talk to Dr. Mark. Scott and I will hear the question, as you will in real time, and Dr. Mark, we might try to clarify it a bit or give our two cents, and then we'll turn it over to the expert, Dr. Mark, and get the real answer. So I think that's kind of the scheme that we're shooting for, and this may or may not work, but we're willing to put it out there and see if it does.
It's almost like...
Well, you guys have to be on like Google, because I don't have the real answer. You guys be like Google searching, say you're wrong. So together, maybe we'll get a half-assed answer.
Sounds good. Scott?
Well, I was thinking this is like a microcosm of the society we're in right now.
And I'll just make something up.
Perfect.
We're a microcosm of our society right now, because there's a lot of people thinking and telling us things with authority that they think is the right thing. But we're going to do that. And then we're going to be corrected by somebody that has the knowledge, has the right answers.
Okay, Scott, let's kick this thing off. Let's lob this over to your side of the court and see how you handle this by yourself.
So we're gonna do the first one. We're gonna kind of work our way up. The first one, we're not gonna call the person, because the person lives in the UK. His name is Lee Lawrence, and it's 1 a.m. right now in the UK. And for some reason, he didn't want to get up and take a call at 1 a.m. So we're going to, he gave me permission to use a British accent and read his question. I'm not going to do that because I don't want to embarrass myself, nor do I want to embarrass Lee. But this is his question, and here it goes. I want to ask if running a long run fasted in the morning could have health risks. I have done this to assist in fat adaptation, which I believe is important, but is there a downside? That's from Lee Lawrence in the UK.
Dr. Mark, let me put in a layperson's guesstimate, okay? Because you are no doubt the expert and you're formulating or already have your answer. But I'm going to say, Lee, it really depends on the length of your run. You know, I would encourage it if it was a shorter run, but once you get to a certain distance, I think it becomes a bit problematic to try to recruit everything from your fasted state. Scott, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say a similar answer. I do this regularly. So when I go on my morning run, which is a hour and a half to 2 hour run, I haven't had anything to eat prior to that. Now, like Don said, if it's longer than that, and depending on how fat adapted you are, it's probably not, you got to kind of work yourself up to it, I think. So that's my answer.
Okay. Now, Dr. Mark, you weigh in, throw some science, that whatever that science stuff is that you talk about, but you put science some logic stuff to it and let us know if we were on the mark or yeah. And help Lee with his answer.
I think you guys are, first question, I think Don, you kind of, well, is it an out and back? and how far? Because you guys have probably done that before. You're like, oh, damn, you know, I got to get my way home. And so again, how far is it? And is an out and back, you know, like, are you somewhere where you really, okay, I'm really balking here and I'm about 4 hours from home and someone just said I should do the 12-hour COVID challenge or something. Most people are doing that in like some little backyard loop, you know, a 4 mile loop, and they, you know, come back to the barn. But it does take time to be able to adapt your body to use fat as fuel. And it depends on the pace, you know, so if you're running at that conversational pace and you've spent, you know, probably several months, even a few years, you know, to teach your body to use fat as fuel, meaning, you know, probably 10 to 20% of your daily calories are carbohydrates. You know, then you can, as long as you have electrolytes, you know, so summertime, I'll go out for 2-3 hour runs, but you know, you're going through a lot of fluid. So I'll take, you know, some type of salts. I use those little UCAN, little straws. It's called Hydrate, doesn't have any calories, but so I'm throwing those into every water bottle, because I think you do need the sodium and the magnesium that keeps your cells hydrated. But really, there's no real downside to it unless you haven't made that adaptation, or you're on medications, you know, someone's on insulin or some type of medication that's going to raise their insulin. And, you know, that's not uncommon these days for newer trail runners. They take up this running thing because their doc says, you know, you really got to lose some weight and they're on all these meds. So, and then, you know, you kind of gradually work your way up to it, you know, start at an hour, you know, at go slow. And then maybe the next weekend, go an hour and a half, and then two. And pretty soon, I mean, you can probably go 3 or 4 hours and you know, I've done, you know, pretty long trail runs, even 50K type of things. And, you know, might have 100 calories in the whole thing.
Dr. Mark, I'm going to jump in front of Scott and ask this question. What kind of things should the runner look for to realize that I better put in a couple calories here? What are a couple of clues they might have that saying I better shove in 100 calories because things are looking bad for me?
I think your brain, you get hungry, right? You just kind of get hungry. You get kind of foggy brained. You know, if people really want to get a little bit scientific with it, I have a glucose monitor on my arm. And if you've developed the capacity to use your own body fat as fuel, you find that your sugars actually go up as you run.
We know that you are pretty fat adapted. We also know that you're super fast. When you were out there running your fast marathons, when I mean fast, I mean speed fast, not fasted. Do you usually take in calories when you run a marathon distance, or are you just taking in hydration and electrolytes?
Very few calories. Back in my older days, you know, carb burning days, I would take a gel every half hour or so.
All right, the next caller, we have Kevin.
Wait, Scott. What? Scott, next caller, first caller, first time ever on TRN. Well, make it sound like we've been doing this for a decade.
We did a virtual call before, but this is the actual first live recorded caller. This is Kevin Mays. Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks. My pleasure.
Kevin, tell us where you're from.
I live in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Well, Kevin, you were one of the questions that were chosen for this podcast. Go ahead and ask Dr. Mark.
All right, thanks. Hey, Dr. Mark, thanks for taking this question. A couple years ago, I had my left meniscus scoped, and when the doctor did that, he said he had found arthritis in the knee, said I was going to have some issues with it. I've tried over the years different types of things to kind of help me in my running. I've tried physical therapy, wearing different types of braces, and I've even tried some alternative therapies like low inflammatory foods, oil, CBD, and such. But none of that seems to give me any real relief. And the only thing that has really helped are a couple of things that I know aren't really looked well upon in the running community. One of them is the use of ibuprofen, and the other is getting steroid shots, which I have taken a couple, tried to keep it down to 2 or 3 in a year at most. Those are the only things that really seem to give me some long-lasting relief. Am I missing anything else that I should be trying?
Yeah, it's a great question and with not one easy answer. So if you're able to kind of do those measures, you know, a little ibuprofen, if it keeps you running, and, you know, even if a steroid injection, Kevin, once every 3 months just helps you stay out there to do what you want to do for your brain and your body, then that's good. But if it gets to the point that you're doing those things and you're just limping and you're not enjoying yourself, I don't know, how old are you now, Kevin?
56.
Yeah. So people will say, oh, you're too young for a knee replacement, you know, but now the technology is pretty wild. You know, if it's only one side, there's, you know, if you have a good sports orthopedist, there's meniscus transplants. There's they call them hemiarthrectomies, where you wouldn't do a full knee replacement. But if it gets to the point that you've done all those things and you just cannot do what you want to do, go ahead and look at some other options. You know, people will do things like, you know, bone broth and some of the collagen stuff. Some of that stuff can, you know, depending on how severe your condition is, can help a bit. Synvisc, there's other types of injections, which are like Hyalgam, different type cartilage injections that can work a little bit. So try different things. But when all that fails, it might be time to go the surgical approach. But don't quit running. It's okay. Dick Beardsley, who battled Salazar in 83, ran 2:45 on 2 knee replacements, something crazy like that.
Hey, Dr. Mark, I'm going to submit this, that sometimes when you go to doctors, they will tell you you have arthritis. Sometimes it's much like saying there's clouds in the sky. You don't know if it's one solo white cloud through a summer sky or it's a storm coming. Yes, there's clouds, but you don't know the severity. Yes. And many times doctors will say, you have some arthritis, but you don't know the severity of that arthritis.
We have some.
And so I think some of the first measures you might do is take a look at your gait. You know, what are you doing maybe to irritate that knee? Maybe you clean that up a little bit, take some mechanical load off that knee while you're running, and you can clear up the solution altogether with some running gait improvement. Or maybe it's your shoe. You know, some people get into that high stacked shoe, the Hoka or some Ultras, Olympus, that are very high stack, and it seems to be a little more comfortable for them. So there's some measures I think you can take mechanically before you look into some, surgical solutions.
Yeah. One other thing, Don and Kevin, so it's hard, I'm not seeing you now, but 1 pound off your belly, if you're overweight, not if you're ideal body weight, if 1 pound off your belly is about 4 pounds off your hip and knee joint. So if your state looks like mine, which it does, you're a runner, but if you've got that little friendly passenger on your belly, this may not be you, but if you do, get rid of the sugar, because just that. But you mentioned you've done kind of some anti-inflammatory diets, which tend to be like real food. But if you are carrying a little more weight around the middle, just don't do anything radical. Just get rid of some of those carbs and see if you can lose a little of that body fat. Sometimes that helps. But the gait stuff, getting an analysis or even getting on something like a TRUEFORM runner, which will sort out your gait, can help out.
Well, that went well. We're one for one on the calls. Now we're going to try another one. This is Muhammad Youssef Abdul Hamid. Muhammad, thanks for joining Trail Runner Nation. Well, what's your question for Dr. Mark?
First of all, it's an honor to talk to you. Divergent goals. So one of them is trying to hit sub-3 in a marathon, and then the other one is maybe sub-24 in the 100. Question is that should I be focusing on one, for example, like speed for marathon for a while, and then switch over to like a 100? The reason why I'm asking is that eventually I want to do Western States, for example. And I do know that going uphill is kind of my struggle. Downhill, I usually do better. So that's another part of the question where I do know that my glutes and hamstrings are not firing correctly.
Okay, I think we're loaded up with the question. We'll handle the first one first. Scott and I will weigh in, get clarification from Dr. Mark, and then we'll handle the second part of the question. That's at least the plan. So the question, as I understand, is running a sub-3 hour marathon, which is really fast. I mean, I don't know what your minute per mile pace. I'd have to look at my pace calculator, but I've never had to look that deep into the calculator because I know I can't run that fast. And that's the beauty.
That is 6:52, I believe.
Yeah, I drive my car 6:52. So, but running 24 hours in a 100-mile run, the beauty of that is you really don't have to run fast. You just have to run long. And that's what's wonderful about a sub-24 100-mile run. So they're two different types of training, but one sets yourself up for the next. Running long miles slow builds that big, big base, which allows you to stay at your 6:52 for 26 miles. And then running some speed work sets you up so you're not just slogging all day long in your 100-mile run. So they complement one another nicely. I think the smartest thing to do is get in very good shape, peak for the type of race you want to do, recover, and then start another complete training program with your race goal in mind. What do you think, Scott? Do you think I'm close?
No, I think, and I don't know whether I have a whole lot to add other than Muhammad was mentioning that hill climbing is a weakness for him. And so as you get prepared to run a trail 100, especially a hilly one, it's probably a good thing to get into the weight room or do some lunges, really build the strength of your legs, and then go out and practice hill climbing, going up, then kind of, you know, just do a recovery run back down to the bottom of the hill and then run back up the hill again and just continue to work specifically on climbing.
Yeah, right, Scott. You know, some great fit athletes come out to Western States or a hilly course, and we'll just say Western States is synonymous with the hilly course wherever you might be. And although they're in great shape, they've been in the flatlands, and so it takes their legs out. They get fatigued going. Their quads get fatigued going downhill, and their hamstrings fatigue going uphill. So you've got to train for your race and find similar type of training grounds. So I think it's time for Dr. Mark to weigh in. And somehow, Scott, I think we put the two questions together, and that was my fault. So, Dr. Mark, if you can pull us out of this, go ahead.
Oh, gosh. Well, I've never run 100 miles. So somewhere it came along, like someone said, well, what's the smart way to do this? And the first question, I think, is, you know, is it smart to try to run 100 miles? You know, but we don't do that because it's an intelligent thing to do, I don't think. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of do that because, you know, I've run Comrades a couple times, 56 miles, some 50 milers, but I haven't yet taken the leap to run 100 miles. So maybe in 10 years, you could ask me that question about what's the best way to prep. But, for most of the people I know, I have a lot of friends who've run these 100 milers pretty fast, you know, Western States under 24 hours, some of them former Air Force colleagues, and all of them have come from, you know, most of them ran at like the Air Force Academy, you know, were 13, 14 minute 5K runners, you know, like Jim Walmsley broke 14 minutes in 5K. I think he was right at 4 minutes for a mile. You know, then they become pretty fast marathoners. And then ultimately, you know, they want to go do something crazy and they move up to 100 miles because they have such a big endurance base and they run really efficient. You know, so I'm sure even though it is, I don't know what the pace per mile is for a 24-hour 100 miler, but most of them are on trail. But you've got it when you're running, you probably got to be running pretty efficiently at a low heart rate. You know, so to run that sub three, Muhammad, you've got to be able to run pretty close to your VO2 max at a pace that you're burning fat. So a lot of that is your dietary adaptation and your efficiency. You know, how fast can you run, you know, without eating through all your glycogen? I don't know, what is your 10K? Like, what is your, you know, because that's kind of gives you a little bit of kind of clue how quickly you can run a marathon. Have you done a 10K or a 5K anytime recently?
Haven't done 10K recently, but the best marathon I've come is a downhill one, which is a 3 hour 48 second.
Oh, 3 hours and 48 seconds. So like you were really close.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, it's a downhill. Yeah, it's a downhill. So
but
I need to train more that I can do that on flat.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, I think you have it in the tank, and then it sometimes it's just between your ears. Just you believe you can do it. You probably know where maybe you lost a little bit of time in that one. Maybe you went out a little bit too fast, but a downhill marathon will really trash your quads. So sometimes you'll go a little quicker on a flat one. But if you can get your, you know, your 10K time down about 34-ish minutes, you know, that's 6:30 pace, you know, and you've built a big, you know, and if you're a trail runner, you know, you've been listening to Trail Runner Nation and caught the bug and you can go out and comfortably run 3 or 4 hours on a trail. You know, you've got the endurance and you've got the wheels. So I think you're then just go out and go for it and have some fun. The uphill stuff, you know, from doing trail runs and ultras, you know, you got to become a really good walker because that's you shift it up and you become a super efficient uphill hiker because I think you just start losing energy when you try to run it. So keep practicing that and, you know, get up to the mountains there. You know, you're probably an hour from good mountains where you are. So you probably got to do a little weekend excursion to do a 3-4 hour mountain kind of hike run. And that'll prep you for that longer stuff.
Here's the good news, Muhammad. It just came in that you have to run a 6:52 to run your sub 3 hour marathon. But the good news is
you run a
14:24 to run a sub 24-hour 100 mile. And so Dr. Mark is right. You can walk up some of those hills. You're not running all of them. You've got to be efficient at your aid stations. But a 14:24 is a silver buckle. So I think it's in your grasp. I think it's within your reach. And I look forward to seeing that silver buckle on you someday.
Our next caller is Brian Roberts. Hey, Brian, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Denver, Colorado. Yeah.
You sound a little bit high there. Yeah, good.
maybe.
Hey, thanks for wanting to come on the podcast and asking a question. What do you have for us?
Well, I think the weather today feeds into this, but I normally run outside, living in the Front Range here. I have a great access to trails, but I'm considering a treadmill for the house. I've heard Mark talk about manual treadmills in the past, and I have two questions. One, are they better to run on than powered? And what's the difference between the brands, if there is any?
I have the perfect answer for that.
All right.
And you may have seen this on social media recently because it's become all the rage. What you need is a good pair of wool socks and a can of the spray oil. And what you do is just put that get on a nice hard surface, spray that cooking oil spray on the ground. Make sure you have something to hang on to in case it gets a little bit slickery, and then just run in place with those wool socks.
Oh. I think I've seen that viral video.
That's my answer.
Yeah, that's a great question, Brian. You know, so a manual treadmill, for those listening, so a manual treadmill does not have a motor. So you're the motor there. It's going to be a curved type of treadmill. I've been on three types of manual treadmills. You know, the first one I was exposed to was an old school Woodway with a pretty steep curve. And at some of the military gyms, they had these. And they were really good if you really wanted to work on your sprint and your coordination. But it was like a flywheel. Once you got that wheel going, you know, you really had to, it was almost like a hamster wheel. You had to keep running fast to keep up with it because the belt would just keep spinning. And I never saw anyone at any base gym ever be able to run on that thing. They would hop on it, do a little sprinting, and then hop off of it because it didn't give you a good response. I was exposed to one called a TrueForm Runner maybe 7 or 8 years ago when came to my store. Jeff Vernon was the developer of that and wanted me to try this one out. It had a much gentler curve and had a little bit of resistance. And you could actually go run on that thing. Like, so the immediate first response was, this is cool. This complements good running mechanics. And if you're in some kind of bad posture and you're leaning back or too far forward or quad dominant, not using your glutes or just all the bad habits that we all do, the thing would just stop. So it taught you how to run easy well, and then you could speed up. So you master the art of like running really easy well and then speed up. So I really liked the feel of that one. It was made in the USA too, which is kind of nice. Nothing at that time was made in the USA. Had a little bit of resistance. It was bomb proof. We actually got about 20 of those down to military basic training in San Antonio. So they use that. They have one of these TrueForms with an athletic trainer now deployed throughout military basic training into a unit, which is about 100 kids per. And then they rotate through it and learn. And they're doing some research there just on injuries. I don't know all the results there, but when I've been down there watching what the trainers are doing, they love it because they can teach these kids who are 18, you know, who just hate running. I mean, most of them just hate running because it's painful and it sucks. So they get on the TrueForm, they learn a little bit, teach them to slow down. There's another one we brought into our gym because they had a contract with a manufacturer who makes multiple types of fitness equipment. It's called a Skill Mill. Forget who makes it, but they make all kinds of fitness equipment. So you'll see those in a lot of gyms, Brian, that have a lot of different ellipticals and things because it's a similar brand. And this one, you can set different resistances, but it's really steep. And I've seen that at our local gym by my hospital. I've never seen anybody on it. And I couldn't imagine like running for 20 minutes on it. So I'd like the TrueForm one because you can actually run on it. I have four of them at my store and people can come in and do a workout on them. I have one in my basement now. I'm kind of like Don and Scott. I'll go out in most weather, but there've been some mornings where it's just really shitty and I'll go down on the TrueForm and, you know, my kids hop on it every now and then too. You know, everyone's kind of sheltered in place, but you know, and the one that we got in my store 7 years ago, I mean, we still have it in my store. You know, you can't beat it up. You know, you could put one of these on a ship and just, you know, beat the snot out of it, and it's just, it's all steel. You can't beat it up. So I don't know if that answers the question, but that's my own kind of N of one experimenting with the three different ones and watching others on them that cost. I don't know how much each of them cost. You know, I think the Woodway is probably the priciest. Trueform has a model now that's a little less industrial. It's a little less steel, a little more kind of fiber and plastic, which is more easier to move around, more for home. And that one's, I think, somewhere in the 3,000 range. But these things will last a lifetime.
You know what I'd like to see? A treadmill company get behind their treadmill and say, all the training you'll do will be on the treadmill only. And then you're going to enter a marathon, a 50-mile race or 100-mile race with treadmill training only to prove that you can do it. Oh, do you think that's possible, Dr. Mark? Do you think someone could actually train solely on a treadmill, sign up with and sign up to a race, put the bib on, and finish the race?
That's I think, Don, if so many people, we use the Trueform to teach people how to run, and we use them at our medical courses. So I honestly think if someone just ran on a Trueform and mastered that and then got on the road, they would, because they've just ironed out, especially if they wore a thin shoe on there, you know, they would just dial in. You can't run bad on the thing. It just stops. And if you can learn how to run without getting exhausted on it, it means you're getting better. If you hop on it in 2 minutes and you're huffing and puffing, then you're just recruiting muscles that just, you know, aren't used to being worked, because you got to use your glutes. If you get tired really quick, it means that your booty is really not working. But after, you know, a few weeks of running on this thing, like, then you're not tired all the time, which is good. It means you're recruiting those muscles that are meant to run, not using all those small muscles in your foot and ankle. You're using some of the big movers in the hip. A lot of runners don't use their hips at all, don't use their glutes, and it forces you to do that. We've got some videos on my website with the Trueform.
You didn't record that, Scott?
No.
Can we do that again? Can we do that editing prowess again?
Yeah. Hey, our next caller is Clint McKnight. Welcome on, Clint. Where are you from?
Hey, guys. I live in Edmond, Oklahoma, so right north of Oklahoma City there in central Oklahoma.
Well, thanks for reaching out to us. What's your question for Dr. Mark?
Hi, Dr. Mark. I love running and the kind of the fitness that comes with running, but I often deal with these nagging sort of injuries that hang on for a while, and, you know, plantar fasciitis and runner's knee and probably a few others that I try to ignore. But if I were to start improving my running economy and start to run pain-free, what is the first thing that you would have me do, or what's my starting point?
Oh, that's a good one. And Mark is going to set us straight, but first Don and I are going to try to attempt.
Oh, I want to arm wrestle you for this one, Scott.
Go first.
I have 8 minutes and 26 seconds worth of gold. That's your hint as my answer. Go ahead.
No, you go first. You already said you wanted to.
Dr. Mark, he's produced the most amazing video. I don't know how many million downloads it has right now, but he goes through the running economy and how it works and why it works. And I am sure that you've probably even watched it. Who hasn't watched it? But I think that's probably your best first step.
And we'll ask Dr. Mark how to get there. I was going to say, Clint, you're absolutely right that running economy is going to hopefully help you from getting a lot of those injuries. The other thing is, my first question for you is, how fast are you running? Are you a speed demon?
You know, I've won a couple of, you know, kind of the local, less competition 50Ks. But I would say that generally I'm more of a middle of the pack runner.
Okay. That's usually what, at least personally, that's what usually kills me. If I start going faster than I had no business, of doing from my training, that's when I start getting issues, and some of those are lingering.
And now, Scott, I advise you too to watch the 8 minutes and 26 seconds worth of gold so that you can run fast and not give yourself an excuse to run slow.
Yeah, in that video, if I remember right, Mark runs at different paces showing the same running economy. Is that right?
With shoes and without shoes. I mean, it's brilliant.
Hey, Mark.
I know, because I've watched it a lot. Dr. Mark.
Mark, where can we find that video?
Oh, that video that I think they're all your views of the it, but it's on naturalrunningcenter.com. You'll see the video and a couple other ones we've done without shoes. Yeah, so yeah, just go run barefoot. Isn't that the clue to everything? Yeah, just run. That was the answer like 10 years ago for every injury, run barefoot.
But Dr. Mark, what I love about the barefoot running, and you talked about it, you're not suggesting we take off our shoes, but you took your shoes off so we could watch your foot and we could see that how it operates and how it works without the shoe covering it up. And that's one of the reasons I really love it, because we can appreciate the mechanics of the foot, how amazing it is. And that's why you took your shoe off, to teach us.
Yeah. So to not be hurt and all these niggles, slowing down is like really, really important, you know, and that's how we build our endurance, build our mitochondria. So just slow down. People are afraid to slow down. And I do almost all my running now, like nice and super slow, and maybe once a week, dial it up a little bit. I think doing drills, you know, so we have some of them in that 8-minute video, you know, plyometrics, burpees, skips, short sprints, you know, these things, you know, not to the point of exhaustion, just doing these things we did as kids every day, just help our movement, you know, help our coordination. So don't do a lot of that stuff. Just don't stop doing it. You know, how old are you now, Clint? You don't mind me asking.
I am 40 years old.
Yeah, so you're a spring chicken. You're young. Yeah, so just go play ultimate frisbee. You know, doing those things, you know, that makes you move in different directions. You know, get out and, you know, play some football. You're in Oklahoma. You know, just go run backwards, run sideways. You know, I describe a lot of it in my book. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Run for Your Life, and you have to train for your weakness too. Different people have poor economy when they run for different reasons. Some it's metabolic, some it's strength, others it's purely biomechanical. So you have to sort out, you know, if you've got someone there who can give you good advice, a good physio, you know, they can look at you and look at the big rocks, you know, and take care of those things.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me, because at this kind of time, I haven't been able to go to the trails as much, which is kind of where I would normally take it nice and slow and have lots of sort of dynamic movements. And I've just been trying to rush and fit everything in and hit the pavement.
Yeah, and the trails, like if you go run, look for potholes. You know, like you want, if you just run, that's where, you know, like someone who's on a motor treadmill in the winter, really not changing up their pattern at all. And then they want to go out and run a trail, and every footstep's a different pattern. So even, you know, go find a nice dirt road there somewhere, you know, hop over some fences, look for all the cattle coming after you. But yeah, just really mix up the terrain. You guys have some hills out there, and I know it. I've been out there, some of the Air Force bases, you know, in the middle of Oklahoma. And yeah, so just go look for those terrains that are just irregular.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Clint. That was a great question. We appreciate you calling in.
All right, and our last caller for this first call-in show is Kirsten Jett. Kirsten, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Where are you calling from?
Amarillo, Texas.
Texas. Boy, we have this whole country covered on this call-in show. Hey, thanks for joining us. What's your question for Dr. Mark?
I have been dealing with proximal hamstring tendinopathy for about 6 months, so right at the insertion point in my butt. I have been doing a lot of things for it as far as isolation holds and things like that. It's always there. Sometimes it hurts a lot, and sometimes it doesn't hurt very much, but it's always there. And sitting definitely aggravates it.
Well, I would love to chirp in here, but after you said hamstring and before you said tendinopathy, you lost me. So I'm gonna default to my friend Don, who has a little bit more experience with that kind of stuff. Don, what do you think?
Well, Scott, let me translate for you. What she's talking about is classic pain in the butt.
That's not what my wife doesn't say. I'm causing her tendinopathy.
It's right there on your sit bone, right there in your pelvis where the big muscle, the hamstring, inserts or holds on to the pelvis. And that's where the problem is. And it's a big, strong muscle, and it's activated every time you climb a hill, step up a stair, or get up out of a chair. And you're always using it. And you feel it, especially when you're sitting. And what I would say is, all with all injuries, I'm going to take a stab at this, and we'll have Dr. Mark put some science to it. But you know, one thing you don't want to do is aggravate it. You need to rest things to let them heal. So if you find something that flares it up, running up hills, running hard or running fast or overstriding, things that stretch it are going to cause some irritation to it. And just like a cut in the finger, you don't bend the finger back and forth. You expect to open that wound up or that cut up or laceration. You need to take it easy and give it rest and be certain not to do too much rolling on it to smash it and irritate it. I like to always go by this saying, trauma never helps trauma. If you get on there and just try to do more rolling on hard stuff and you irritate it more, I don't think that helps. However, I will say this, it's good to get in some mechanical stimulation to it, but not too much. And that's where instinct and sometimes good guidance from a physiotherapist will help you, or even a chiropractor can help you know where your limits are. So I'm going to throw that out there, and let's have Dr. Cucuzella clean us up.
This is a common injury we see, and I think, you know, Don is always, he's spot on. You know, you need to have someone there in your community who understands running and who can do a full kind of physical assessment on you, including gait analysis, because gait retraining, you know, we're always thinking, okay, I got to treat my hamstring if my hamstring hurts, but you never want to treat the thing that hurts. You know, you want to let that heal. But the problem is probably on the other side. Quite often, if your right side hurts, your problem is more on your left side and you're compensating. Probably the most common thing I see, Kirsten, that causes this upper hamstring tendinopathy is overstriding. And one of the cues, you know, because we talk about cues, you know, land soft, land stable, you know, like try to kind of vision something in your mind. But if you watch the Kenyans run, Kirsten, they're always like their leg gets behind them, like they soften their hips. So when they hit the ground, they don't tense up. They actually get hip extension, and somehow they're just neurologically doing that. One of the things you can do with your arms and hands is keep them really tight to your chest, you know, like your knuckles right to your chest. We even use this little rubber bungee that loops to the thumb, so you can't throw your hand like way out in front of you. Because if you watch a lot of runners, their hands will go way out in front, and that's where their foot's going to land. And that's where you get a lot of tension up in that upper hamstring. In the morning, I always roll a little bit on my quads, and I do hip extension stuff just because, you know, you're laying down, or if you have a job and you're in a, I have a stand-up desk, but if you're sitting all day, all those muscles in the front get tight. But a good chiro or physio is really going to be the person to see to help you sort it out, you know, if you have any of those issues. Get a gait analysis, get someone to film you running.
Hey, Dr. Mark, what about ice, like an ice cup treatment? Do you think that would help in this situation?
Gosh, you know, I think there's very little in the literature for these things, you know, whether it's ice or heat but if it feels good, do it, right? But if you keep hammering it, you know, whatever that injury is, if you keep doing the same damn thing to it, you're going to keep paying the price, whether you have ice, heat, stim, or whatever, you know, widget you've got. Slowing down is good too. You know, a lot of people just want to go out and run too hard. You know, sometimes just like chilling out and slowing down. Good nutrition's powerful too, because nutrition is really where we deal with a lot of that inflammation, you know, that negative inflammation. When we train, we get a little inflammation, we heal, we get stronger, but that comes from rest and good nutrition. So, you know, if you have a job where you're not sleeping well, stress high, you know, like pain in the ass things, you know, someone's a pain in your butt and it's causing you a lot of stress, that sometimes can negatively affect, you know, your body's healing of these things that just last, you know, months and months.
Hey, now,
don't give up. So,
Dr. Cucuzella, I'd like to submit this. We've talked a lot about slowing down. And I think that's good advice, but it's not slowing down forever in a lot of these cases. It's slowing down to get rid of the niggle, to get rid of this pain in the behind. It's about recovering, Yeah. And then you can increase your rate again. It's not always forever when we say slow down.
Hey, Kirsten, do you mind me asking, have you ever had someone do a gait analysis for you, or have you ever had yourself videotaped? You know, that's one of the things that I learned from Don is get somebody with their phone and just have them videotape you run in front of them, you know, left to right, east to west, and then watch this video that we will link to the show notes, which is on the naturalrunningcenter.com website, or there's a really good one that we mentioned the other day of Anton Kropitschka running, and watch that video and then have them video you again. So you have a good image in your head and try to mimic that. I think that, and seeing yourself run, I do it all the time. I think, oh, I'm landing on my forefoot. And then I see a picture from a race where the race photographer takes a picture of me and I am landing square on the back of my heel. I think that I'm doing things right, but it takes a photo or a video to really bring that to reality.
If you see what's happening at the end of a long race or run versus the beginning, you know, everything tends to break down. We all look pretty good at the first mile and then it all goes to shit later on. So sometimes the fatigue factor plays in.
So here are the best steps to do that. Put your camera in landscape, right? Instead of straight up and down, put it on slow motion. And then here's what I've done with many, many people. I just have them run in their shoes and just run naturally from either east to west or north to south. Scott's all with all these directions, but just have them run across you. And then I have them take their shoes off without any explanation and say, go ahead and run again. And then I show them the video. I show them the first one in slow motion versus the second one in slow motion. And I have them analyze their own gait. And in the first gait, they'll see themselves overstriding and landing on their heel, most likely. And in the second one, with their shoes off, they'll take shorter strides and they'll land on their forefoot just because they just do that instinctively, intuitively. They clean their form up without any instruction at all. And then I just share with them, put your shoe back on and run in that same program that you did, your same mental imagery that you did with your shoe off, just with your shoe on and without any instruction at all, just some visuals and this exercise, gaits are improved dramatically. You make the biggest change without any instruction at all. People just know it on their own and it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, that was really fun. And I learned a lot from some of the questions that our listeners have called in and asked. And of course, I've learned a lot from Dr. Mark. So thank you, Mark.
Well, I learn from you guys every time I listen to you. So it's mutual. That was fun. And the guests. So
yeah,
we'll do it again.
What I think Dr. Mark learned is not to accept the invitation when we do call-in shows.
Well, that's a wrap. That's our first call-in show. It is yet to be determined whether it will be the last call-in show. We may not do it again. We'd like to thank Dr. Kukuzela and remind people that you can go to Two Rivers Treads to not only stop by and support them face-to-face in their brick-and-mortar store, but you can also call them. We'll leave the link in the show notes. They're available for mail-order stuff and just sound good running advice about running gear. They'd love to hear from you. So thank you very much, and run mas.